Hello, and welcome to this audio edition of Philip Pusher's program notes for upcoming concerts by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. I'm Rich Caparaw. Concerts by the CSO on Thursday, March 28th through Tuesday, April 2nd, feature the orchestra's concertmaster, Robert Chen, leading a program of Bach, in fact, two Bachs, both JS and Sun, CPE. The program includes Brandenburg Concerto No. 3, the Violin Concerto No. 2 with Robert Chen as soloist, by CPE Bach, a Sinfonia in E-flat. Robert Chen will be joined by principal oboe William Walter in the Concerto for Oboe and Violin in C minor by J.S. Bach, and the final work is Bach's Orchestral Suite No. 1. Here are Philip Pusher's program notes on the Bach Brandenburg Concerto No. 3, a work lasting about 10 minutes. Berlin is now only a short afternoon's drive from the half-dozen towns in east-central Germany where Bach lived and worked his entire life. In 65 years, he never set foot outside Germany. But in his day, the trip was much more arduous, and Bach didn't travel that far unless he was sent on official business. He went to Berlin, apparently for the very first time, in 1719 on an expense account shopping trip to buy a new state-of-the-art harpsichord for his patron in Köthen, a small, remote, rural town, sometimes called dismissively Cow Köthen. Bach wouldn't recognize Berlin today with its traffic jams and round-the-clock construction, but he was probably put off by its urban bustle even in 1719 because he had only a passing acquaintance with large towns such as Leipzig and Dresden. We don't know exactly when Bach visited Berlin that year. On March 1st, the Köthen court treasury advanced him 130 thalers for the harpsichord built in Berlin and travel expenses, or how long he stayed. But he found time to make several useful contacts, none more beneficial to the future of music than the Margrave Christian Ludwig of Brandenburg, who asked Bach to send him some of his compositions. At the time, Bach was preoccupied with inspecting the harpsichord that had been made to order by Michael Mitke, who was famous for the quality of his high-end, elaborately painted instruments, and with arranging to have it shipped back to Köthen, but he didn't forget the Margrave's request. It would be another 2 years before Bach handed Christian Ludwig the carefully written presentation copy of the six concertos we now call the Brandenburgs, after the Margrave's province just to the south and west of Berlin. Its capital was Potsdam. Bach's life, in the meantime, had been busy and unsettled. He had watched three family members, his 10-year-old son, his wife Maria Barbara, and his brother, die, a sudden spate of funerals, even in an age when life was short. He had gone to Halle to compete for the job of organist. He later declined the offer, which suggests he was growing restless in Köthen, despite working for an enlightened patron, the 20-something Prince Leopold, who both loved and understood music. The prince's sympathies would suddenly change in 1721 when he married a woman who seemed to be alien to the muses. And in addition to his daily workload at Köthen, he was trying to finish some of his most important music, including the sonatas and suites for solo violin. We don't know when Bach wrote the six concertos he dedicated to the Margrave of Brandenburg. Recent scholarship suggests that most of them were already finished when he met the Margrave, two of them possibly dating from 1713, and that he simply took his time compiling a set of pieces, some old and some new, that he thought made a sufficiently varied and satisfying whole. The presentation score he gave the Margrave is a gift edition of the set, almost entirely in Bach's own meticulous handwriting, prefaced by an elaborate dedication page written in French and dated March 24, 1721. We probably will never know when or where these works were first played, but they were obviously not widely known during Bach's life. The obituary, prepared by his son, Carl Philipp Emanuel, doesn't even mention them. The earliest documented public performance of a Brandenburg concerto dates from 1835, more than a century after they were written. Today, they are arguably Bach's most popular works. The third concerto, thought to be among the earliest of the six, is scored for a ninefold group of strings, three each of violin, viola, and cello. Its inherent homogeneity of sound challenged Bach to create remarkably diverse sonorities and continuously changing textures. Bach spins the contents of each movement from just one or two simple themes handed off from one group of players to another, eventually involving the instruments in what seems to be all possible permutations. There's no clear-cut, consistent designation of soloist. The assignments change from page to page. The standard black and white contrast of the typical concerto grosso, the entire ensemble, alternating with the solo group, is blurred here by the music's ever-evolving nature and by Bach's fascination with endlessly varied shades of gray. Both fast outer movements travel the wide spectrum from assertive unison passages to intricate polyphony, and from full orchestral splendor to the conversational intimacy of chamber music. One curiosity still unsolved: in place of a conventional middle slow movement, Bach writes just two chords, those that would normally provide the movement's final cadence, leaving musicians, possibly beginning with the Margrave's Own, to wonder what the great master himself might have wanted. Notes by Philip Huscher on the third Brandenburg Concerto. And now on to Bach's Violin Concerto No. 2 in E major, the performance time around 19 minutes. After Bach moved to Kärnten in 1717 and was no longer tied down with preparing music for weekly church services, he had time to write many of what would become his best-known works. During his 6 years in Kärnten, he composed the 6 Brandenburg Concertos, the 6 suites for solo cello, much of the keyboard music we still play, the first book of Well-Tempered Clavier, the 2-part Inventions and 3-part Sinfonias, the English and French suites, miscellaneous sonatas and partitas, and more than a dozen concertos. That is a lifetime's output all by itself. Though for a composer whose complete catalog numbers in the 4 figures, it was probably just business as usual. The familiar Bach Werkeverzeichnis, a catalog that attaches a BWV number to each of Bach's composition, lists 1,087 works. Research continues to adjust the final tally. In fact, a few years ago in Kyiv, Ukraine, the scholar Christoph Wolff discovered the long-lost musical estate of Bach's son, Carl Philipp Emanuel, which contains unpublished scores by J.S. Bach, 2 of his sons, and his predecessors. This great outpouring of instrumental music was written for Bach's patron in Kärnten, Prince Leopold, who fancied himself a connoisseur and who, at least until he married a woman with no ear for music, played the violin, the viola da gamba, and the keyboard. In Kärnten, Bach began to compose concertos for violin and, in a few cases, for violin combined with other solo instruments. Only 2 of the solo violin concertos have survived in their original form. A number of existing harpsichord concertos may well have begun life as violin concertos. Bach and his contemporaries were avid recyclers, and it was not uncommon to transcribe violin music for the keyboard. In fact, both surviving violin concertos also exist in later reincarnations for harpsichord and orchestra. Bach was a skillful violinist, although he was far better known as an organist. Carl Philipp Emanuel later summarized his father's talent. In his youth and until the approach of old age, he played the violin cleanly and penetratingly. Throughout his life, Bach wrote wonderfully for the violin. He understood to perfection the possibilities of all stringed instruments, Carl continues, and there are countless passages, not just in the concertos, to confirm this. The famous air on the G string from the D major orchestral suite alone would prove the point. The E major violin concerto has 3 movements in the traditional fast-slow-fast pattern. The first and last both adhere to the ritornello scheme, in which an assertive musical idea for the entire ensemble returns like a refrain, separated by episodes that allow the soloist to shine in phrase after phrase of florid, exuberant music. Both movements are particularly spirited and joyful, propelled along by a seemingly irrepressible rhythmic drive. The contrasting central adagio in C-sharp minor is one of Bach's grand, majestically paced, introspective arias. Program Notes by Philip Huscher on J.S. Bach's Violin Concerto No. 2. And now on to the Bach Orchestral Suite No. 1, a work lasting about 21 minutes. Today, it's hard to imagine a time when Bach's name meant little to music lovers, and when his four orchestral suites weren't considered landmarks. But in the years immediately following Bach's death in 1750, public knowledge of his music was nil, even though other, more cosmopolitan composers, such as Handel, who died only 9 years later, remained popular. It's Mendelssohn who gets the credit for the rediscovery of Bach's music, launched in 1829 by his revival of the St. Matthew Passion in Berlin. A great deal of Bach's music survives, but incredibly, there's much more that didn't. Christoph Wolff, today's finest Bach biographer, speculates that over 200 compositions from the Weimar years are lost, and that just 15-20% of Bach's output from his subsequent time in Köthen has survived. Two-fifths of the cantata he wrote in Leipzig have never been found. A very large portion of Bach's orchestral music is lost. The existing 20-some solo concertos, the 6 Brandenburg concertos, and 4 orchestral suites no doubt represent just the tip of the iceberg. We're probably lucky to have the 4 suites at all, in fact, since they aren't mentioned, even in passing, either in the extensive obituary prepared by Carl Philipp Emanuel or in J.N. Forkel's pioneering biography published in 1802. The numbering of Bach's 4 suites, like that of Dvorak's symphonies, is a convention that has little to do with their order of composition. The first suite is, apparently, the earliest, dating from before 1725, but the second, with its winning flute solo, is the last, composed in 1738 or 1739. It may well be Bach's final orchestral work. The fourth suite was probably written around the time of the first. The third can be dated with some certainty from 1731. None of Bach's original manuscripts for the suites has survived, which makes dating them unusually difficult. Bach didn't call these works suites. He used the conventional term of the day, overture, after their grand opening movements, but they are unmistakably suites, that is to say, sets of varied popular dances. For the idea of starting each one off with a large-scale overture, Bach was indebted to Jean-Baptiste Lully, the 17th-century French composer who perfected what we now call the French overture, a solemn, striding introduction kept in motion by the brittle snap of dotted rhythms, followed by a quick, lively, imitative main section. Bach borrows Lully's boilerplate, but makes his overtures into magnificent, expansive pieces that tower over the dances that follow. In fact, Bach's overtures are nearly as long as the remainder of the suites they introduce. Each of the suites, written at different times and for different players Bach knew, has its own personality, its own design, individual sonority, distinctive stylistic mixture, and overall sensibility. And each presents a different hand-picked selection of dances. The first, which is the earliest of the 4, is the most consistent in following the old-fashioned practice of featuring individual dances in pairs. Bach used many of the most popular forms of his day, including the courante, a dance in triple meter that originated in the 16th century, became popular in both France and Italy, and then quickly fell out of favor, the gracious gavotte, originally a French peasant dance and later performed in court circles, a forlin, a lively folk dance from the northern Italian province of Friuli that developed into the French courtly dance, the elegant minuet, which was particularly fashionable at the court of Louis XIV, himself an avid minuet dancer, and became the only Baroque dance that didn't go out of style during the classical period, and the bourrée, a lively French folk dance in duple meter that was popular at the court of Louis XIV. Bach ends with a double passe-pied, a spirited dance in triple meter that's a quick variant of the minuet. The second passe-pied is even related to the first, taking its original melody as the foundation for a new oboe theme. Program notes by Philip Huscher on the first Bach Orchestral Suite. I'm Rich Caparella. Thanks for listening.